Welcome to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil.
Welcome, everyone, to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil. I'm Brent Smith, alongside my favorite sidekick, Shane Stetsny. We're coming off a huge weekend in Wheatland, Missouri, going from a fast track on the schedule to a little short bull ring at the Antigo Lions Roaring Raceway.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting back to Antigo. I've said this a few times now. Stock car racing needs Talladega and Daytona. They also need their Martinsvilles and their Bristols. I think Champ Off-Road needs Antigo. We need that compact track, that tight door-to-door racing, wheel-to-wheel. Rough a guy up to pass him if need be. I think it brings a lot of excitement. We saw plenty of that at Wheatland, too, and maybe we'll get into that a little bit. But, yeah, I'm excited to get back to Antigo and excited not to have to fly anywhere to get there.
Yeah, it's going to be a nice weekend. I mean, close to home, like you said, we're excited to get there. The big changes are going to be huge, like you said, going from the big track to the small track. But it's my cup of tea, Shane. I love it. As a race car driver myself, being on the short tracks, I feel the drivers that are really talented will come to the top and perform.
Well, that's a great segue into some of what we saw at Wheatland. I want to kick things off by talking about a couple stories of redemption, though. You know, one of the big headlines, especially in Pro 2, was that Keegan Kincaid is returning to race full-time this year. He wants to win a championship. Hasn't done that since 2021. So a bit of a dry spell for him. And obviously he ran part-time schedules in those years in between there. I think that's his statement win in round two. I think that's a big statement for him to start the season with that kind of momentum. Puts him on a really good trajectory. Pro 2 is super tough. We've talked about that plenty already, but I think that's a big statement for him. And then redemption in another way for Dylan Parsons. He had that huge crash in the Pro Spec truck on qualifying day. Came back, not the results he wanted in Pro Spec, but also ran the 1600 car and won in round two. And I think that's going to be huge for his confidence to recover a little bit, because he was beat up pretty bad after that crash. And then the other story of redemption, Michael Meister took all last year off after getting married. Comes back and he won round two after having a tough day in round one. Which one of those three stands out to you the most?
Well, I mean, you got to go with the big crash, right? I mean, we've seen two different crashes, Jesse Greaves and Parsons. But Parsons, his was nasty as well as Greaves. But to come back that next day, having your guys bust on the truck, getting it back together. But, I mean, that's a tough race car driver. Me, mentally, that would have been hard to get back in the truck. You want to get over it right away, Shane. But at the same time, man, I mean, you don't know if you have a concussion, anything's moved around in your body. I mean, those hits are treacherous to your body. And I just give a lot of credit to that team and what he's overcame. And he'll be right there. I believe for Antigo, that's going to be out the window, and he's going to be one to reckon with.
Yeah, to have the little bit longer break than what we're used to during the season, a month off between those two races, I think will be huge for him. But like I said, just the confidence to be able to get back in the 1600 car and go out, and that's tough class to race in too. And for him to win, I think that's a huge step forward. For me, you know, obviously to see Parsons bounce back, that's a huge triumph for him. But I think that's a big statement by Keegan. I think, you know, we talked about that battle, what Pro 2 is going to look like with Keegan, Ryan Beat, Johnny Holcher, and Ricky G. I think it's wide open still, but Keegan right now kind of looks like the toughest customer of them all.
Yeah, and I don't mean to leave Keegan out. I mean, he didn't go through any kind of big crash, but just that adversity to switch in his season around early on, coming from the last couple of years where he's been up and down and short scheduling here and there. I mean, now he's focused. I mean, to win at his sponsor's hometown track at Lucas Oil Speedway, that was huge for him and his team. And the kid's got it in him, right? I mean, Keegan, we've been watching him for a lot of years. Him and his father, Jeff Kincaid, they're just ones to watch. They are good. I mean, you can't say anything but that. They're like a Johnny and CJ. They've been around this sport, and it's really showing. And I would love to see Keegan keep on going in the streak he's pulling together right now, because he's just not only a good dude, he definitely knows how to drive these Pro 2s.
He's one of those drivers that when he is racing full-time, the whole series is a little bit better for it, I think.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And you got to have Keegan Kincaid, right? If it was up to us, Shane, we want everybody to be in that group. In Pro 2, Pro 4, you see the numbers fluctuate throughout the year, but If you don't have a Keegan Kincaid in there, you don't have a Ryan Beat, you don't have a Johnny Holger, it's not even worth it, right? You want to beat the best. So to beat the best, you got to have them in the group.
Well, another big story coming out of Wheatland, the opening rounds at the Show Me Off-Road Shootout. You mentioned Jesse Greaves got hurt on practice and qualifying day. The report from the man himself on social media, broken arm, bruised lungs, and a concussion. I hesitate to say no serious injuries because those are serious injuries, but man, thank heavens it wasn't worse than that. We saw the crash. I saw it live. I was up in the spotter's stand at the time, and shook me up a little bit. Crazy rollover.
Yeah, it did. I mean, it was hard to watch, and that's why I always said those guys are talented, but yet crazy, because once the side-by-side gets crossed up, there's really no bringing it back. I mean, you've seen the Parsons crash to the side-by-side. I believe he went, what, 12, 13 times off that table? That was not good at all.
Yeah, it was a bit of a tough day. Another truck that will be out of the running, driver was fine. It's Aaron Messenger had that huge fire if the inlet on the fuel rail failed. So it was dumping fuel all over the motor. Crazy fire. He was able to, it felt like he was in there for a really long time, but then, you know, no more than maybe 2 hours after that happened, we talked to Aaron and he was smiling oddly enough and kind of threw up his hands and said, yeah, that's the way it goes sometimes. He was fine. The truck, they have a lot of work to do on it. It's pretty well barbecued, all the wiring and everything, and that's a whole chore in and of itself, but great to see that he was all right.
Yeah, that's tough, you know, for an independent team like Aaron to bounce back. But I mean, like you said, he was smiling. He was just trying to stay positive, and those seconds turned into minutes while we were watching. I mean,
felt like it.
Yeah, it was reminding me of the days back when Rob McCracken started on fire and you just want to see him get out. And I hurried up and asked him the question. I'm like, what were you doing first? He's like, man, I had to get my crotch belt off and then my pumper off my helmet got stuck a little bit. Like, I can't imagine. Like, I used to practice it at home in every car I had because my worst fear is burning up in a truck or a car. And he did a great job getting himself out. And the way the track was set up, though, right, Shane, we got to tell everyone at home, it wasn't easy for our safety crew to get to him.
Sure, yeah. I mean, they got to him as fast as they could. Right. By the time they got there, he had gotten out and was, other than still being connected by his helmet pumper hose, you know, he was well clear of everything. And like we said, he was totally fine. And he'll be back later on this year. Not exactly sure when. I know that in person he told us, you know, maybe as late as Lena in July or Bark River in August. But I also know that some other people have stepped up and already started to tear that truck down. So maybe we see Aaron Messenger back sooner than what he told us.
Yeah, he's a hard worker. He's got a good job behind him. So he'll bust his butt and get that truck back together. It's great to see him keep trying. And hey, that Pro Spec class is one to watch. We love tuning in and calling that race week in and week out for sure.
Yeah, that was one class that had, one class of many, I should say, that had a first-time winner in Champ Off-Road. I listed them all out in our notes here, and I was going through all the results, and I'm like, oh man, that's another first-time winner, and the list is big. Code St. Peter with the win in Sportsman Side-by-Side, Dakota Akins, a win in Mod Cart, Peyton Weisbrod got her first Champ Off-Road win in the 570s, Wyatt Miller went back-to-back, of course, in Pro Spec. Drew Gerber in the 170s, Grayson Forseth in the 200s, Rick Schroeder in Pro-Am Turbo, and then Short Course Kart had two first-time Champ Off-Road winners in the two rounds, Gabe Holcher and Riley Zahara. Are any of those big surprises to you? I think there's a couple there that are surprising for me, and the bottom of that list, I think, is Wyatt Miller. We all saw that first win coming a long way away, I think.
Yeah, it was just a matter of time. That's what stood out to me. It's so great to have Wyatt Miller in our series and performing as well as he is. I mean, granted, he's got Ryan Beat behind him and a lot of great other people, but to perform is huge. And I feel he's going to be one to watch once again throughout the rest of this year. He's going for a championship, and it's hard to slow him down because of what he's doing behind the scenes, right? He's running dirt late models. He's running outlaw cars. He's running sprint cars at Millbridge. He's doing what he needs to do to get the driving down. And I think he adapts very well. We know he does. And he's just one on my sheet to keep an eye on.
Yeah, no doubt. I think I made this comment to you at Wheatland that, you know, certainly his career trajectory is going to take him far beyond Champ Off-Road. You know, that's coming down the road in a couple of years. We got to really enjoy this kid while he's racing off-road. He's going to be racing on Sundays in cup cars in a handful of years. I almost guarantee it.
Yeah, I know. We reminisce about it when we're at the hotel back and forth week in and week out, because it's like, hey, you know, enjoy it now. I mean, walking through the pits at Wheatland, it's like he's just going to keep progressing. And it's hard not to say that he won't be with Uncle Dale in a NASCAR Cup Series when he's ready. And I've seen a lot of talent through my life, but he's one like Jimmy Johnson or Ricky Johnson.
Absolutely.
That can just keep on moving forward.
I also do get a kick out of, you know, he's out there winning races in pro spec, and it's easy to forget that he's still a kid. And like, you go back in the pits at night after the races are done, he's hanging out with Race Visser and Gavin Plummer, and they're, you know, at Wheatland, they were going fishing together. And it's easy to forget that, you know, he's still a kid himself.
Yeah, and you got to let him be a kid as well, right? I mean, if you're his parents, I mean, they're doing what they need to do to put him in the right situation for racing, but he's also getting out and fishing and hanging out with Race Visser and Gavin Plummer. I mean, we've seen it firsthand. I mean, he's just another kid, and he's getting to do big things. And it's cool that he's bouncing off these other race car drivers in our series, because it gives these guys and gals confidence that, hey, man, yeah, he's doing it at a young age. We're the same age, so what's holding us back? So now you're seeing Gavin Plummer in the pro spec division, and he's trying really, really hard, and he's getting that opportunity, and a lot of kids don't. So you just hope when they get that chance that they have what it takes and the equipment, what it takes to perform.
You know, another young driver who really performed, I talked about short course kart having two first-time winners. The race that Riley Zahara won on Sunday at Wheatland, round two, for me, that might have been the most fun race of the whole weekend. Obviously, round two Pro 4 was a typical day two Pro 4 race with all kinds of chaos going on. But that short course kart race in round two, you know, Riley leading the pack, I think even partway through the race, like the top eight were still all bumper to bumper. It was just a ridiculous race. She was able to hold on, narrowly escape with the win. I think the top three were like 7/10 apart, something like that, when it all came down to the end. That was really fun. And short course kart, with the veterans from last year moving on up of the, out of the class, short course kart is going to be just wall-to-wall fun. Two first-time winners through two rounds. Could that be this year's stock truck from a year ago?
Hey, it's shaping up great to be that way. I mean, we see so many great race car drivers, new talent, returning talent is very slim in that class. So we're going to see a lot of new time winners, and Zahara's doing what she needs to do to just make it happen. And it's, you have to put the stamp down in the beginning part of the year. And when we call these races, it's no different than calling a Pro Light, Pro 2, Pro 4 race for us, because they really get us into the show.
Well, I wanted to spend some time talking about the other kart class too, mod kart, a little bit smaller field than what we'll see the rest of the year when we were down at Wheatland for the opener. There's four really talented drivers on the way, the Holcher and Peitel family. Obviously, Colin Peitel and Ella Holcher have been in mod kart the last couple of years, but Finley Holcher, Camden Peitel joining that class as well for the rest of the year. And I was curious, because it seems like those kids have won like 1,000 races apiece, because they've been racing the entire time here in Champ Off-Road. I looked it up. Ella, again, this is by my count, and I may have missed a couple along the way, but Ella has 10 wins in three different classes. Colin has a win in 570s. Finley has 5 wins in the 570s in short course kart, and Camden with 4 wins in short course kart. That class, just like short course kart, I think is absolutely wide open. There's only 3 drivers in the class that have ever won a mod kart race, and 2 of them were first-time winners from Wheatland, Dakota Akins and Wes Vandervoort.
Yeah, and that's what's crazy. Anytime the Holgers are there, they're going to make a stamp in the soil. They know how to win. I mean, Ella, she is just one to watch, a very young, talented girl. And it was sad not to see her running at Wheatland, Missouri, but to get them back behind the wheel is what we want to see, because the best of the business are in our area. And that team, they bring a great group of competitors each and every week. And it makes our job easier, because when there's a lot of talent, you never know who's going to win. And that's what's so fun about it.
Right. I suspect those kids are all going to be running the HBI colors on their trucks too.
Oh, I really
hope they do us a favor and try to find some way to make them all look distinct, because 4 fast HBI trucks in mod kart is going to be a handful for us.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to have some cool wraps on the cars, but yeah, we're going to have to stare at the number plates for sure.
So when I was looking up those win numbers for the families there, I started to think about the success that Ella Holcher has had. So every complete year that we've had Champ Off-Road, we've run 5 years, Plus, this is the start of year six. She has a win in each of the first 5 years across multiple classes. And I was wondering, there's got to be some other drivers who have the same level of success while racing more than one class through that time period. I found that there's five other ones. And I'm going to put you to the test right now. Can you name the other five?
Holy man.
I know. I told you I was going to give you a trivia question, and this is probably a big ask of you, but you shouldn't have to think too hard for one of them. There's one guy that seems to win a lot.
Cody Kranz.
Cody Kranz is one of them.
Race Visterbia one? I want to say race, but...
There's a pro guy that wins a whole bunch.
Oh, CJ Greaves, obviously. That's an easy one.
All right,
there.
You got two. You're barking up the right tree a little bit with Race Visser. Someone that lives with Race Visser.
Oh, Nick Visser himself in Super Stock Truck?
Super Stock and Pro Spec. He has a win in Pro Spec each year of Champ Off Road. The other two are buggy guys, by the way, if that gives you any hints. I'll give it away for you. I'm surprised you got Cody Kranz. So that was a really good pull by you. The other two, Connor Schultz in light buggy in 1600, and Billy Booth has won across all three buggy classes. But
sorry, Schultz, how could I forget? Sorry,
yeah, he's the other guy that seems to win all the time besides CJ. Speaking of Connor Schultz, I'll float another question to you. This one won't be a head scratcher quite as much. We saw it happen a few years back with Billy Booth, where he won 1600 buggy and light buggy championships in the same year. How high do you put the odds that Connor can do that this year?
Man, it's hard to go against the kid at all. Anytime he's in any classy races, he finds himself up front. So, I mean, dealing with the new cars through their teams and like advancing their programs in the offseason, I would say it's a 9 out of 10 that he's going to get the job done, because just the momentum they bring every weekend is very scary for other competitors. I mean, light buggy, a lot of the drivers you talk in the class, they're very open about, hey, you know, these kids are still running in this class. They're winning all the time, but who doesn't like to win? And I think the Schultz have the whole package to do what they need to do to win in two different divisions in the same season. So I feel there's a very great chance that he'll get it done.
I think 9 out of 10 feels high, because 1600 is really tough. You know, Mike Seifeld's leading the points right now. He had a phenomenal weekend down there. I think he had a win in a second place. He was a champion a couple of years ago. Last year's champion, obviously, Johnny Fitzgerald out of the class. But 1600 to me just seems quite a bit tougher for Connor. I'm not saying he can't do it. It is tough.
I'll
put the odds at a coin toss. I'll say, obviously, he's the hands-down favorite in light buggy. But 1600, man, it's tough.
Yeah, we see a lot of talent in that class. I'm just going off of what we've seen the past 5 years out of those guys, and it just seems like they always find a way to be up on that box, and they'll be one to reckon with. But like, I love to see the veteran Seifeld doing what he's doing at such a late stage in his life, still showing that he can get it done. It's very impressive.
He is going to give you the what for calling him old, by the way.
Yeah, well, I will. He knows I love him.
Speaking of wily veterans, how about Nick Bing on Sunday, round two at Wheatland? The aggression that he was the only driver in the class willing to early try to clear the brunt booter and got it done successfully, and that let him pull away from Braden and everybody else. I think the confidence from being aggressive in the opening weekend, look at all the facts. That's a really, you're putting a bunch of money out there to pull that far to even be there, and then to risk your truck like that. They don't have a lot of suspension, and he was still willing to fly that tabletop just to lay it all out there to win that race. Is this the year that Nick Bing finds himself on top of Super Stock Truck once again?
Well, he's doing what he needs to do. He's definitely putting his A game on. I mean, that was crazy what he did off that flyaway, that booter jump. That brunt booter was huge. And to watch a Super Stock Truck launch off that jump and land the way it did, he put the back end down first, the first one. And we both in the booth were like, wow. I mean, you could hear it in our voices where, man, you have to have a set of kahunas to make that happen. And he did it early, and it was an advantage, because we talked to Braden later after that race. And my dad told me over the radio, you got to hit it. Bing's hitting it. But it was just a little too late. He made a little nice little pass on Braden and ran away with it. I feel he's going to be the guy to watch in that 833. He's been around a long, long time. He knows what the truck loves. He's one with the truck. We're going to Anago. It's a great driver's track. So Yeah, he's going to be tough to beat, but you can't hold out on Braden. Look what he did at Lena in the off time for Mams Oil Championship Off-Road. He had two great wins against Nick Bing. So, you know, at any time, anyone can win, and that's what we love.
Yeah, and you can't count out last year's champ, Corey Holcher, who had a pretty good weekend to start the year, took fourth in round one, third in round two. And I think what I saw from Colt Wersba last year, how well he did at Lena last year, I think that translates to him being just as fast as anybody at Antigo here in a couple weeks too. So really good competitive class there. You can't count out Cosiza, Barglund, and those guys. I think we're in for a treat when it comes to Antigo Lions Roaring Raceway and what they'll offer us for Super Stock Truck.
Yeah, there's going to be fenders flying and flaring everywhere. We're going to have some fiberglass fireworks like you like to say, Shane. It's going to be fun. I mean, you're going to have to protect your truck as well as driving the wheels off of it. And it's a very tricky task to do. And I remember going through it. It's stressful, but you got to do what you got to do to make it happen.
Well, you know who always makes it happen, Brent? The sponsor of this podcast, and that's AMSOIL. Race fans and friends, if you love power and performance and you love saving money, make sure you check out AMSOIL.com. AMSOIL preferred customers can save up to 25% on AMSOIL products and get free shipping, exclusive promotions, and a lot more. Visit AMSOIL.com and sign up today.
Well, Shane, we talk about our sport and how it's evolved in all different ways, but it seems like the young talent has really put their step down in our series. I mean, we talk about the prospect division and where it's going, and we see so much young talent playing a big mix up in our series, I believe.
Yeah, what a great weekend it was for some of the young kids racing in quote unquote adult classes. I mean, I mentioned earlier Code St. Peter had the win in round one in Sportsman Side by Side, his first ever race in Champ Off Road. Third on Sunday, Brody Disher, fourth in round one, second in round two in Sportsman Side by Side. He's still a teenager. Of course, Wyatt Miller sweeping pro spec. Avery Hemmer was second in round two. I remember making a joke to somebody standing by the podium because the podium in round two was Wyatt Miller, Avery Hemmer, and Nick Visser. And I said, hey, why are they letting that old guy race this kid's class? And got a laugh from the two people that heard me. And then Chade Minder, a win in a second place in Pro Buggy, currently leading the points. Man, like the young kids are all of a sudden taking over.
Yeah, they really are, but they're talented, right? It seemed like back in the 90s and the early 2000s, we've seen young talent like CJ Greaves coming through the ranks, but it seemed like there wasn't as many as there are today. And it's huge. It's great for our sport, but kind of a bummer deal for some of our older talent. You know, there's nothing we can say different. I mean, when you go home at night and you know you got beat by a 12, 13-year-old, I mean, hey, sprint cars, anything in the world nowadays is you're watching these young 12, 13, 14-year-olds, like I said, winning big races because our lives have evolved over the years. Like, they're just getting that opportunity. They're driving go-karts at 4 or 5 years old. And I see it through the Holgers, Johnny Holger Racing. His mom and dad have the little Buckaroo racetrack. It gives these young kids 3-4 years before they even get into off-road. So they know how to drive these cars. So you can't really take anything away, Shane.
I'm just hoping that there aren't young kids with comparable levels of talent that want to take our jobs, because the way it's going, it's always a gut check moment, especially, you know, I'm now in my late 30s to watch like pro football or something. And they're talking about some guy that's had an amazing career and he's been around forever and he's like 34. I'm like, oh, come on, man. I'm not that old.
It is. It's a bummer deal. I know we're not that old. And you seem to look around and it's like, man, this young, talented group is coming through the ranks. And we know that we got a couple kids that love to be us and fake broadcasting at home. We hear stories from parents saying, hey, you know, Grayson Arneson
and William Holger,
all the Holgers, they were just playing around. William Holger, yeah, and just telling their mom and dad how we go home and they just talk about the races and how they want to be announced. I'm like, hey, bring them in the booth. And then when they do show up, that's what's so cool, right?
I'm going to tell William Holcher and Race Visser, who seems to like to pop in on us too, stay in your lane. You guys are race car drivers. You're welcome to come visit. Just don't come gunning for our jobs, right?
Yeah, if we can fit in their cars when they come to the booth, Shane, we'll just run their cars. That's the deal.
I'm not sure that, I mean, we had to put William on a chair in the booth at Wheatland, so I don't think either of us could fit in his car. It's not fair. We can't trade.
Well, we're about a week away before the short track of Antigo, Wisconsin. We have another special guest on the Champ Off-Road podcast. Matt Borschinger. How's it going, buddy?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we appreciate you taking some time with us. It's good to hear from our sportsmen as well as our pros. But, Matt, I want to take it way back to the start. So I do this exercise every time we have a guest on. I'll go to their Instagram, scroll to the bottom, and try to get a sense of where they came from, where you came from. You come from a racing family. I know that much. And you were racing stock cars as a teenager. But what was that journey that led you into off-road racing?
Yeah, so it really was a lot of growing up. I had my dad raced. Both my uncles raced. So I was around a lot of the dirt stock car community. So basically having every weekend going helping my uncles. I really didn't do much racing myself when I was younger. Always wanted to, kind of wanted to get into go-karts and that, but never seemed to happen. Always busy working on everybody else's cars. And then my uncle actually started racing Pro Light around like 2011, 2012. And that's really what got me in loving the sport of off-road. And always wanted to do it. And finally, my uncle came up to me. It must have been 2019. And he said, hey, I just talked to Johnny Greaves. I'm going to have him build me a YXZ. You should come race with me. And I'm like, I don't know. I ended up just buying a house. And I'm like, I don't know if it's in the cards for me right now. Well, we ended up, I found a car on Facebook Marketplace. And my now wife came with me. And we went to Race Driven. And one of Brian Heiding's old cars he was selling. And I was like, it's a good deal, good starter car. Had pretty much everything I needed. It was turnkey, and we decided to go racing. Then COVID hit. Pretty much racing was all I was thinking about.
And so when you jumped in, you were like, that was the wild, woolly days of sportsman side-by-side when there was like 30 cars, 35 cars that were showing up. Every race was just absolute chaos. What was it like, you know, jumping in feet first, and that's the experience that you had?
It was pretty intimidating. I mean, there was like about 35 cars racing sportsmen side by side. Back then it was just sportsmen side by side or pro stock, so got to start somewhere. So we started with sportsmen side by side, and there was a lot of rubbing and a lot of learning. It seemed very challenging to try to keep up with a lot of the fast guys that have been already doing it for a few years. But once you got caught up and you were able to keep up with that front pack, it was a lot of fun, I'll tell you that.
No, you talk about the fast guys and everything and the factory guys. I mean, that's a big challenge, as we talked about a couple weeks back. Then we met up at the Island Resort Casino and we were just talking. I remember, and you're saying, you know, just that factor alone is challenging because you don't have a lot of factory support.
Yeah, for sure. Especially being a sportsman. And now I moved on to racing Pro-Am, which is a ton of fun and it's extremely competitive. And it's nice that it doesn't have that factory quite support in the Pro-Am yet. So you're able to run against what I like to call just the average Joe, though. And it's really fun, super competitive class. And pretty much there's probably 10 or 15 guys that can win every week. It's pretty exciting.
Right. And what I noticed looking back over the past 5 years or so, well, the entire existence of Pro-Am side by side, the guys that have been in there are like legit, you know, hardcore veteran drivers like Bill Berger, the Jones brothers, Jared Jaden, Jacob Lemke, Lucas Houle. And you're in that top group along with those guys. How hard is it to suit up every weekend knowing that you have a ton of really, really competitive drivers that all want to take that top spot?
It's extremely intimidating. But the only nice thing is that a lot of us have been racing together for so long that respect is there, that you know,
right,
you can run side by side with Jared Jaden. He's not going to turn down on you. He's going to give you a little room if you end up sliding up. It makes the racing really fun.
Yeah, I mean, bumping and grinding is one thing. I mean, but if you can go in there, honestly, like you said, and trust that person, that's huge. I mean, you can concentrate on your own run rather than, you know, get to a certain guy. I had in my racing is like, oh man, you got to get by that guy as quick as you can.
The guy I think of for that is Kurt LeDuc. I don't know how long you've been really following short course, Matt, but Kurt LeDuc was that guy in Pro 4 back in the day.
Oh, I remember Kurt LeDuc, Ricky Johnson. That was some fun times in Pro 4.
He was one guy that everybody raced him a little different because he raced them a little differently. you couldn't pass him without roughing him up a little bit.
Well, could we say maybe Johnny and Kurt the same? Depends on what boy is where, right?
Matt, with the such a competitive class like we're talking about, I don't want to say, do you find it easier to swallow when you don't have a great day, but is it, you know, some days just not your day and the other guys have it a little bit better? Does that is it less frustrating to lose when it's that competitive, or more frustrating to not be able to come out on top?
I feel like it's a little bit more. You know that you should be up with those guys, and you know that hopefully you're putting in the more work to try to, with the setup and to try to make your racecraft better, that it kind of gets to you a little bit when you see those guys up there and you can't get around them. It makes it very challenging for sure.
Do you feel like iron sharpens iron, like by racing against such talented guys that you're better off for it too?
100%. When you see those guys, like all of a sudden one race, you'll have Cody Jones will come flying past me and you're like, oh my gosh, like, what am I doing wrong? And you're like, I need to get better. I need to put my head down and figure out what the setup is and figure out if I need to adjust some tire pressures or what lines I'm running. It definitely iron sharpens iron for sure.
So, I mean, if you would talk about racing at different tracks, are you a more of a short track racer, Matt, or would you say you like the wide open fast layouts for your driving ability and what your car likes? I mean, I know you told me you're kind of under the power range of what the Polaris's are, but what really fits your driving style?
I like the longer tracks. Like Barkerville is my favorite track. We had a pretty good last year. I was able to win two out of the three races there. And it just, the flow of the track and when you make a mistake, it just adds up because the straightaways are so long. And then there's the technical on the inside of the track. I really like the long tracks. The short tracks can be a little challenging if your setup isn't quite right. It's really hard to be able to adjust and still keep your speed up.
Yeah, mentally, it's got to be so challenging, right? You have to be on your A game going from track to track, obviously, but there's so many challenges between, you know, getting to the racetrack, leaving the racetrack and getting back. I mean, you could tell everybody out there what happened going into Wheatland. You were kind of explaining it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Wheatland was quite the challenge with having a wedding on Friday night, packing up the camper and driving straight to Wheatland, Missouri, and just making it there probably about an hour or two before the race, and then suiting right up, going to tech and going to the race. That was definitely nerve-wracking for sure.
He wasn't the only one, Shane, that had problems going to Kansas City.
I don't even want to talk about it. Hey, we made it there and we made it back. That's all I care about.
Yep. Yeah. We had a dog barking on the plane and it wasn't even a dog.
That's what it sounded like anyways.
Right.
Hey, we made it. So you said you prefer those bigger tracks, but I was, you know, looking back at your results over the past few years in Pro-Am. Got a win at Crandon, obviously a bigger track. You've got a couple at Barkerville, and then you've got a couple at Dirt City, which is a smaller track. You know, eyes on what's next. Antigo, I look back at your results there, and you haven't had very good luck, very good results there. Why has Antigo been such a thorn in your side? Is it just bad luck, or just like you said, it just doesn't quite suit you in the car?
I'd say more bad luck there. I think it was 2 years ago I was ended up getting a good pill draw because that was the first race of the season. And I was able to start, I think, about fourth. And I was able to finish out, and I got a podium. And then the next day, I was able to start, I think it was like second. And I was in second, and then at halfway, I was like, all right, we're going to go out here, and we're going to get this win. And I went, and I attacked for the second half, and I ended up losing a cylinder right after the halfway caution and was able to hold on to second all the way to the last lap. And I could feel the motor starting to go. And I ended up going over that back tabletop jump and blowing a big hole in the side of the motor, starting the whole back of my car on fire because of all the oil. And it's definitely been quite the challenge at Antigo. I'm hoping that our luck is going to turn around for this 2025 trip there.
Do you approach it any differently knowing that you've had bad luck? I mean, is your mindset different, or are you going to walk the track and try to find a four-leaf clover, or what do you do differently? Obviously, bad luck happens to everybody, but...
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this year, I think is a good thing that we have them two drop rounds. Hopefully, I don't have to use them, but I definitely a lot of planning, a lot of film, watching the races back, seeing where everybody's fast, seeing where the lines are, where the ruts start creating and everything. Definitely a lot of film to try to figure out how I can get my racecraft better there, because I think I struggle a little bit with setup, but hopefully we're able to find some good setup at the short tracks. We just raced Lena, just the sportsman race last week, and I was able to get a podium, and I think we're able to make some big swings at the setup, and I'm pretty excited for Antigo.
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty much similar tracks, so I mean, if you feel like you're going in Antigo, that's a lot of confidence for Lena later in the summer. I mean, but with your job and everything, I know you work construction. How do you fit time in being on the road and prepping the car? And like Shane said, you want to do a little over and above for Antigo to get prepared. So, I mean, where do you find time?
It's definitely tough. You definitely take the weekends, and I have a great crew around me. My dad and my brother, my spotter Austin, and my buddy Darren. I mean, they put a lot of hours into making sure that my stuff's ready. My dad's always prepping tires and stuff when I'm out of town, and we do a lot of communicating, figuring out what we could change, what we can make better, what setups we want to run. And really, it's just a big help from everybody around me. My wife getting the camper ready and everything, it takes a lot of stress off of me, and I'm able to focus on the racing and focus on getting my racecraft better and hopefully getting a win this weekend or next weekend at Antigo.
You've used that word racecraft a couple times. What do you do to actually to work on that? We're talking about the limited time that you have. You know, it's not like you can go out midweek and run the car, or what are you doing? You mentioned watching film, but is there anything else that you do to stay sharp?
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, film is my number one. I watch a ton of film. But also, I try to use a lot of the track time, like our practices that we get, like racing this race at the one-off race at Lena, just to try to figure out some different lines, try some different stuff to see if I can make some speed, seeing how the car reacts to the different setups that we're throwing at it, seeing how I struggle a lot with two-wheeling, going on the bike a lot. So trying to figure out different air pressures and seeing where I'm running. Definitely a lot of studying I try to do.
So Matt, what were your thoughts on Wheatland? How did you enjoy? You mentioned that, you know, stressful travel, but how did you enjoy the track itself? It felt to me, that was the first time I had seen it in person, and it felt to me like the track was maybe almost too small for like the big trucks, but for side-by-sides, it seemed like a really awesome track.
I thought that Wheatland was the perfect track for side-by-sides. It was well worth the trip. The jumps were big and everything. It just flowed really good. And it had a lot of different stuff it threw at you. The whoops, some of the tight technical corners. And then you have the big tabletop jump in the back and Talladega turn. I really love Wheatland. I hope that we go back there next year.
How did that Brunt Booter feel in a side-by-side? You guys are nuts, just by the way.
Oh, yeah. Especially after seeing Jesse Greaves tumble and practice on that. It was definitely a little bit intimidating. I mean, it took me till the last race to try to finally hit that thing full throttle, and I still was lifting just a little bit.
Yeah, Shane had to walk away. He's like, I can't watch no more after Parsons went, and then Greaves went, and then Messenger started on fire. It's like, man.
Yeah, I had to get out of the grandstands for a little bit and think about other stuff for a little bit.
So, Matt, what's your plans? I mean, say you got a five-year plan. Do you plan on getting out of a side-by-side, or do you plan on maybe working into the buggies or trucks?
I think that I really enjoy the side-by-sides, and I like that it's a lot of – I feel like I'm just starting to get my head wrapped around everything, and, like, I think I would like to – I really enjoy racing Pro-Am, and I think it's, like, the most competitive sportsman class. I think that it's – anyone can win every week, and it's still extremely challenging, and I really like the grind of that. Eventually, I feel like I would like to race Pro Stock side-by-side. Obviously, it's extremely tough seeing all the factory support with that. Hopefully, maybe in the future, I could get some factory support and maybe move up to one of those classes. But I would say for now and probably for a few years still, I'm going to be in Pro-Am.
With a new car this whole time, do you look on getting a new car in the next year or so because of an older chassis? Or do you plan on just keep refreshing the one you have?
Definitely seeing how fast these Polaris have been, it definitely gets me thinking about possibly a new car, but for now, probably just keep updating ours. And the Yamaha hasn't really changed too much for like updates. Honestly, my car's a 2017, and really the only thing they changed was the 6-speed transmission that they run now. So the Yamaha's kind of haven't been updating as much. So I'll probably stay with my same car. I do have a car, a chassis and everything ready to go for Yamaha in my back garage, but it's still been sitting there.
Matt, since you've been around, you know, you've raced every year of Champ Off-Road in, you know, 2 years of Sportsman and then made that jump to Pro-Am. What's your take on how much UTV racing has changed over that period of time? Because from where I sit, you know, I think there was that big boom. We talked about how crazy it was racing Sportsman back then, but it seemed like a lot of guys were kind of one-year wonders. There was a moment in time where it's like everybody wanted to try it, and then you had a bunch of like weekend warriors and guys who maybe weren't taking it as seriously. what's that like from your point of view? Like, how do you think it's changed? How do you think it's evolved? And where do you think it's headed, I guess?
I think it has evolved a lot from when we first started from running. Like, I had a bolt-on cage when I first started. And from what these cars look now, and even the tires that we ran, like, we ran those, like, Maxxis Cerros for a long time. Now I look at them, and it's like, why were we even running those? Like, I wouldn't even run them on my regular UTV now.
Because it was what was there, right? It's what you had at the time.
Exactly, yeah. And I think, yeah, I mean, it's evolved a lot. There's been a lot of people that have raced a few years, raced 1 year, been there and gone. But I think that it's only uphill from here. With the manufacturer support getting in, and we just keep getting faster. Like, these cars, everybody's pushing the envelope. Polaris is coming out. They're really fast coming out of the gate so far this year.
Yeah, well, now they pretty much sell race-ready cars. Like, the Polaris factory cars are race cars that you can just go buy and race.
Yeah, for
which
sure.
Which is nuts.
And it's just growing the whole sport. The side-by-side, it's crazy what you can do with a side-by-side. And every, from taking it on the trails to going out in the sand, it's just, it evolving is crazy to think how far we could be in 5 years from now. Who knows what these things are going to look like?
Brent and I have been around short course our whole lives. And I remember when UTVs started showing up in the mid-teens, there was like this weird, it was like a middle school dance. Like, the so-called real off-road guys on one side and then the UTV guys. And there was like this weird energy where they didn't like each other. But I feel like that's changed a lot too. Did you get that sense when you first showed up in off-road that it was kind of the UTV guys and the off-road guys, and they were an odd mixture at first?
Oh, for sure. I think when I first started, it definitely was like that. I think there was, and even with sportsman side, they're just thinking there's 40, you know, guys that just showed up that just went out and bought a side-by-side and put a cage on it, and they came out racing. I think there was a big part of that when I first started racing, but I think it's evolved a lot. I don't think that the other sportsman guys or even the pros, like, look at the side-by-sides as anything less than what they are. And everyone has always had great respect. Like, I was a class rep for sportsman side by side for the last 3-4 years, and everyone was treated us just like everybody else. Like, we were no different than the stock truck guys or the 1600 light buggies that's been around for so long.
Yeah, that's kind of been my sense of it too. And, you know, even though I'll admit I was one of the guys 10 years ago that was like, hey, why are these UTV guys coming and trying to take our,
right,
take what we
too
built, was kind me of the too feeling. But, you know, seeing the amount of crossover between those two, you know, drivers that started in the traditional vehicles, jumped into the UTVs or vice versa, I think it's a tide that's lifting all ships. And the racing in all the UTV classes has been phenomenal.
Oh, it really has been. And you see a lot of these guys move up, like Derek Lieberg moved up to ProLite this year,
yep.
Josh Bear, you know, there's guys that are moving up and actually, and like, even like Colin Kearns and Jesse Greaves and David Gay moving up into the pro ranks. It's definitely pushing the envelope to get us into those bigger classes and getting those support by other, if it's manufacturers or different sponsors.
Yeah. With all these drivers and with all these tracks and cars, I mean, the car counts alone, I mean, it helps our sport as much as Shane was saying. You know, we looked at it where side-by-sides are taking over, but at the same time, it's bringing a hell of a lot more people, bringing a lot more surroundings, and these side-by-side companies are selling a lot more side-by-sides because you not only can run them like a DOT tire on the road, you can race them on the track too, you know?
And like I said, it's been really phenomenal racing. I mean, 170s, 570s, all the way up to, you know, pro side-by-side. It's been, like, really terrific the last couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's a very good stepping stone to get in. You know, you can go to your local dealer, go out, or even buy a used one. Go out and you can build the thing. You know, learn how it all works being able to buy your own parts and stuff like that, like the A-arms and that stuff. It's all stock. So you're able to go out and basically learn the car. And it's definitely very affordable compared to some of the, like, Pro Light and Pro Spec, where everything is custom built. It definitely makes it a lot more affordable.
Well, Matt, we appreciate you joining us. You know, looking ahead to Antigo Lions Roaring Raceway rounds 3 and 4, who are all the people that are helping your program, helping you make it possible to race with us in Champ Off Road?
American Foods Group, American Service Line is number one. Kristen Ambos at Point Mortgage, Victory Sign, they always hook me up with a sweet wrap. Blasey's Hoof Trimming, Alpha Motorsports, The Pancake Place, Yamaha Blue Crew, Hoosier Tire, Power Sports One, and Impact Racing. Keep me coming to the track every other week.
Without any of those great sponsors, you know how hard it is just to show up, but that's great to have some local people on board as well for you. And, you know, you're doing things right. And we wish you the best of luck the rest of the season. And, man, we always seem to be saying your name on screen, so keep up the good work.
Oh, awesome. Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we appreciate you. Best of luck here in Antigo in a couple weeks.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Well, Brent, I think before our podcast hosting gig gets stolen by one of those young kids, we can call it a day on this episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil. Another episode will be out next week. Our guest on that one is going to be Miss Haley Shanley, who was not able to make it to Wheatland, but I know she's super excited to get back to work with Champ Off-Road. So I look forward to talking to her for sure.
Yeah, it'll be great to have Haley back and get her back in the midst of things because, man, she's been all around the country doing what she needs to do. And just our whole group as a whole, Nolan did a great job trackside all weekend long at Wheatland. And I'm looking for big things out of our whole group. We always try to be better. And Antigo is a fun little bullring racetrack, like I said, Shane. And you and I have been going there for years. I actually was able to announce with you a little bit way back in the day, and it just always has a little place in our heart.
Yeah, no doubt. But that's, you know, like I said, that's a couple weeks away. More podcasts yet to come between now and then, but that's it for this episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil. Once again, he's Brent Smith. I am Shane Stetsny, and we will talk to you again very soon.
Thanks for listening to the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil.
Brent did say that you're giving me some friction because I got your win count wrong last year.
Well, I wasn't going to bring it up, but since you did, yeah, you were off by a race. But I just, with being teammates with Cody Jones, you know, I can't let you say he won two races and I won two. Cody's really fast, so being able to one-step Cody is definitely a win in my books.